The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, November 22nd, the Nerf Gun Fantasy Edition. I'm Gabriel Roth. I'm the editorial director of Slate Podcasts, and I'm the father of Leo, who is 4, and Eliza, who is just about to turn 8.
And I'm Carvo Wallace, a writer and podcaster in Oakland, California, and I'm the father to Georgia, who is 13, and Ezra, who is 15.
Rebecca Lavoie is out this week, but we have a special guest.
Hey, I'm Mary Harris. I host a new Slate show called What Next, and I am the mom of Leo, who is 10. That's right, another Leo, and Stella, who is 4.
Today on our show, we have a question about whether you should let your kids play with Nerf guns when you live in the shadow of the Parkland shooting. Plus, as always, we'll have triumphs and fails. We'll make recommendations. On Slate Plus, you will hear from one of our children. I'm not going to tell you which yet. Let's start with triumphs and fails. Carvel, do you have a triumph or a fail?
I have a triumph, which is that Ezra has decided to he's taken the challenges of, since he knows he's not doing well in school, and he's decided that he's not going to emerge into a complete student. He's going to make his way through with as little effort as possible. He now seems to realize that he should really focus on doing something productive in the world. And so he decided to make a movie out of scratch. He's made a few films because he's done stuff with his friends and he's done stuff for class assignments. And then he went to filmmaking camp this summer. But I was sort of like kind of trying to explain to him that, you know, no matter what you do, you have to make something. If it's not going to be school, fine, but you've got to do something productive in the world. And I think it just kind of got to him after a while. And so, and he would say stuff like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I'd be like, yeah, but you haven't done anything yet. And I think he just got irritated hearing me say that. So a couple of weeks ago, he wrote this script for a short and he sent it to me and asked me for my feedback and sent it to a few other people and asked them for their feedback. And I was like, it's pretty good. And this, and it was actually, I really liked it. And we talked through it technically as, you know, like I helped him sort of like identify some writing problems he was having. And we talked through some potential solutions and it was great. It was like exactly what you fantasize about, like this, that one little moment when before you have kids, you're like, my kids are going to grow up. They're going to be interested in the thing I'm interested in, and we're going to bond over this thing, and it's going to be great. We had a few moments of that with the script, but I also have learned through hard-won lessons of trial and error that I need to be very limited in my input and intake into his work and very ginger with my feedback. And I should never offer him feedback unless he directly asks, Dad, what do you think? And if he doesn't say that, then I just say, hey, it's great. Good luck out there. Go get him, son. And that's all I say. And I don't offer anything else. And so I didn't do that. But he did say, Dad, what do you think? And I said, well, here's the one thing I think. And he said, yeah, I noticed that too. And someone else said that. And let's talk through it. So he did that. And then in a move that was a complete surprise to me, he actually then used one of his days off to organize a crew, get a bunch of actors together, get his friend together who has all the equipment, his like rich friend who has all the filmmaking equipment, and he planned this whole thing, and he went and did it. Like yesterday, I went and he called me up and was like, Dad, I need you to, can you pick me up here and take this, and then we have to go over here, and we have to get the boom mic from this guy, and then we're going to go over to this thing, and we have to go to this location, but we're not sure if this, and can you be our kind of like logistical support vehicle for this thing, because they're 15. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I would totally do that. And so I did. And it appears that he went off and did it. And I don't know what the results are yet. He seems happy with the shoot. They're still editing and everything. But I just felt like for years I've been trying to get him to sort of see that, look, if you're not going to be this straight A student that we all know you can be, but you're for whatever reason not doing, then you're going to have to do something. And it seems like that lesson sort of got through to him because I think he just got tired of me saying, but you haven't done anything yet. And he went off and made something happen. And so I consider that a triumph just of self-motivation and of adolescence, you know, just like adolescence growing into like getting a greater grip on what it means to be a functioning person in the world. So shout out to Ezra. I don't know what the final product is going to be. I'm sure it's going to be fine, but I'm just really happy for him that he decided to go out and execute on his vision.
That's awesome. And your personal triumph is that you managed to go from script editor to PA. So good job with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, if there's one thing kids can be counted on to do, it's to offer you demotions and your and to give you put you in positions for which you're way overqualified.
Yeah, it's an exciting career trajectory for you. I myself was hoping that I could count yesterday as a triumph because it comes on the anniversary of a fail. If you've been listening to the show for a year, you may remember that a year ago I reported a fail in which some parent had to go and meet Leo at his school at 10:45 or some ridiculous time like that and walk him from the classroom to Autumn Sing, to like the other building where all the kids do their Autumn Sing, and then we could sit there and watch them sing. And that was the day on which I failed to, I forget exactly how I managed to fail to show up at 10:45 to walk him from the classroom to Autumn Sing, but I don't remember if I completely forgot about it or I thought my wife was going to do it or what the deal was. But in any case,
I think
case,
it was the it was second the, one, if I recall correctly. I think you miscommunicated.
Yeah, I'm glad that this has lodged firmly in your memory, Carvel, because I remember feeling like all of the days when I had picked him up successfully had now come to nothing because just one time I failed to pick him up and he had to get walked over there by the teacher while all of the other kids were walked over by their parents. In any case, yesterday I'm happy to report that I did in fact show up at the correct time and walked into the classroom and he was happy to see me in a way that suggested a degree of relief that may stem from remembering what happened a year ago at the last Autumn Sing. In any case, I was able to do this very basic thing and walk him over from one place to another place at the time when I was contracted to do that. And I was hoping that I could like count that as a triumph, although obviously it's not a triumph. It's just like basically crossing the threshold of like decent parenting. But then we had this slightly more elaborate plan where like yesterday we also, we after the Autumn Sings of first the younger child and then a gap and then the older child. We drove from New York to Washington, D.C. for Thanksgiving with my in-laws, and my job was in between walking the one kid over to Autumn Sing and watching the Autumn Sing. Then there's this gap when Leo and his mom and a friend went out to lunch, and I pick up the rental car, go back to the house, load the luggage into the rental car, bring the rental car back, park it in the parking lot, meet them for the older kids' Autumn Sing before driving down to D.C. It's the kind of plan we should be able to do without me fucking it up. But guess who forgot the car seats?
Yeah. Whoa, that guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's me. So we had to make an extra stop off for the car seats, and so we didn't beat the traffic. And so we got here at about 9. So, annual Autumn Sing fail episode. I guess that's
I can't wait till what you figure out how you're going to screw it up next year. Like, I'm just looking forward to just like an ensuing 15 years of more and more ridiculous ways that you ruin this autumn, this like kind and loving autumn event until eventually you're just like throwing children off the stage as they sing.
Guys, they tell you rituals are good, right? As a parent?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. The ritual is dad fucks up Autumn Sing somehow.
Yeah.
Love that beloved ritual. And I hope this becomes like an annual tradition on this show where listeners can look forward to every annual Autumn Sing fail and discuss your favorites on the Facebook group.
Gather around the hearth.
I really like the one where Gabe drove his car through the auditorium.
That was good. or the one where I was on a conference call and shouting really loudly in the middle of Autumn Sing. Classic stuff.
In a festive kind of way.
Yeah. Thanksgiving stuff.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Mary Harris, you want to share a triumph or a fail?
So I have a triumph that then became a fail and that then became a triumph again, which I feel like is kind of the story of all of the triumphs and fails. Like,
yes.
I feel like all of them are just the law of unintended consequences. Like,
that's
in my
exactly
case,
right.
Preschool edition. So I have a 4-year old named Stella, and I took this job, right? So I'm doing a daily news podcast for Slate, and that involved negotiation with my spouse over who does what, and like, sorry, honey, I can't really pick up the kids for some amount of time, and we got to get a babysitter and all that sort of stuff. I start doing the job, and I realize, like, you know what? I think maybe I also can't drop off the kids. And so I said to my husband, I was like, so maybe you could, you know, just try dropping both of them off. We have a 4-year-old and a 10-year-old, you know, so different schools and different kind of like energies, different emotional energies in the morning. And so we try it on a day, you know, I come into work. I'm like, you know, it's like first day of school, like so excited. And then like the texts start rolling in, like, we're late for the bus. Stella won't leave the house. You know, all this sort of stuff where you're like, okay, this is not going to work. So we go home and I'm like, all right, let's try again. And so the solution I came up with was, okay, if I can get Stella out the door at like 7:15 or 7:30, I can do this. We can do it. Now, that's a challenge because Stella, my 4-year-old, she has like elaborate morning routines. Like, if it's up to her, she has a nice like lay in. Like, she's going to be in that bed, like hugging it for a while. And then she's going to want to come into the big bed and she's going to want to like snuggle. And if people aren't still in the big bed, that's kind of a drama. And then she needs to eat breakfast in her pajamas. Like, we can't get her dressed and then bring her downstairs. Like, eating breakfast in her pajamas is important to her. So it's like there are all of these kind of roadblocks on the way. But I'm like, I can do it. I think I can do it. And my solution to do it is that at her school, they have this situation. You arrive and you take your picture and you put it under a number. So every day you kind of know the order that people are going to have come in, right? So it's like, I said to Stella, I'm like, you know what? We're going to be number one. We're going to be number one.
Nice.
And she's like, all right, I'm on board with being number one. I can do that. And so we, you know, we really do it. We like are breaking the top five regularly, which is like a big deal. And it works, except then it becomes, there's like one girl who's almost always number one, Keiko. And it's like, I want to beat Keiko. And I was like, no, it's not about like beating people. Like, I was like,
fucking
I've
Keiko for crying out loud. Get out
becomes,
of here, Keiko.
Right, exactly. It becomes like this thing like, no, Keiko is number one. And I was like, no, but it's all okay. We're in the top five. And, you know, so I learned some things that like my daughter has a competitive spirit, which is good. But then maybe like, how do I feed that? Right. And so I was like a triumph that was also kind of a fail. But then my denouement triumph situation for this is that I realized Stella has this competitive thing, right? And so we take the bus to school, the city bus. And so I downloaded an app from the app store that lets me track the bus. And so now we compete against the bus. Like, I'm able to, she's eating her breakfast and I'm able to like look up when the bus is coming. I'm like, all right, we got 10 minutes. And I got to tell you, this totally works. Like, if I tell her she's got 10 minutes, she's like shoving Rice Krispies in her mouth. She's like ready to get dressed. She's like, mom, hurry up. And I'm like, wow. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So we came out of that tailspin a little bit. And like, you know, we're all still friends in preschool. And you know, we're using the competitive spirit for good and not for evil.
Yeah.
That's an amazing triumph.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I feel like we got a letter. I remember a long time ago in the Karen Feeding column, we got a letter that was like this. It was like, I am like, we're chill parents. All we do is chill. We just believe in chillness and good love and everything's great. And we have this kid who's taking gymnastics and now the kid is ultra competitive and wants to beat everyone and gets so mad when she loses and gets so angry when she comes in second place. And we keep trying to tell her that it's fine. But she really freaks out. So then we're like, do you want to quit? And she's like, no, I don't want to quit. I just want to win. And so she keeps wanting to go back. And the parents were really worried about, they were just like, how do we stop her from being so competitive? How do we intervene? How do we teach her that winning isn't everything? And I was kind of like, I mean, I don't think that you do teach her that. I think you have a different, your kid is just, you know, you have an Alex P. Keaton situation on your hands. Like, you guys are chill and everything for you is like harmony and getting along. And your kid wants to go out and just be a destroyer of worlds. And that's fine. Like, you're not going to make her not be that way. Now you just have to figure out how to harness that and use that and let it. And she'll figure out how to, like, navigate the world that way. It's great. We can't all be chill. Like, some people are going to be super competitive. I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's like all about channeling the energy in the right way. I like that. I like that.
Right.
Anything that gets you out the door in the morning, man, that is the worst part of my parenting life, is that like 30 minutes between getting up and getting out the door. It's terrible.
Yeah, totally.
Before we move on, let's do the business. As always, if you have a question that you would like us to answer, you can leave us a message. The phone number is 424-255-7833, or you can send us an email. Our email address is momanddad@slate.com. Join our Facebook group. It's really good. Go to Facebook, search for Slate Parenting, click to join, and join in the discussion. Share your own triumphs and fails, offer or ask for advice, make your own recommendations. It's a lot like this show, only it's on Facebook, and there are literally thousands of hosts. On Slate Plus today, we are joined by Mary's daughter, Stella. She's 4 years old. She's going to tell us what she thinks about podcasting. It's going to be a good time. If you want to hear that segment, you want to get another one like it every week, want to get all your Slate podcasts with no ads, want to get special bonus episodes of some of our podcasts like Slow Burn and Standoff, if you love Slate podcasts, you should be a member of Slate Plus. It's a great way to get all those goodies, and you help support the shows that we make. Just $35 for your first year. Go to slate.com/momanddadplus and sign up for Slate Plus today. Okay, let's go. Time to take an email from a listener. This one came to us at our email address, which, by the way, is momanddad@slate.com. You can write us there, too. This question is being read for us by Slate's own June Thomas.
Dear Mom and Dad of Fighting, I have 3 kids, ages 2 to 6. We're thinking of buying them Nerf guns for Christmas. However, we are extremely torn. You see, we live 30 miles away from where the Parkland shooting took place. I went to Stoneman Douglas High School. I have many friends who were there on February 14th. I have been extremely active in the recovery process for the community and have heard many first-hand accounts of survivors. I am also extremely involved with Moms Demand Action as a result of the shooting. As well, I canvassed for gun sense candidates this past election season. As you can see, I'm extremely passionate about this issue. It is still very fresh in the minds of everyone down here, with monthly red code drills and our cars being searched before entering schools and police officers carrying automatic weapons in their backpacks all day. Now, I had Nerf guns growing up, and so did my husband. They were fun. Yet I firmly believe that we over-glorify guns in this society and that this factors into the gun violence problem we are facing in our country. So making this purchase feels wrong. I'm also not sure I will be able to watch my kids play with guns, shooting each other. I struggle with straddling the line between making a stand against guns and my political views and just letting my kids be kids. What would you do? Thanks. Confused gun control mom.
You know, so usually when we get a letter, it's like on the one hand this, but then on the other hand this, what would you choose? This letter only has one hand, kind of. Like, it's like, I mean, there's all these arguments against putting toy guns in the hands of your children, you know, within miles of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And there aren't that many arguments in the letter for putting guns in the hands of your children. And I think that that's like an interesting thing to examine in the way that we talk about this debate about kids and toy guns, because there's all this reasons not to do it. But the only reason anyone ever comes up with to do it is like, it's fun. And I'm like, but other things are fun. And it's like, well, let kids be kids. It's like, okay, but kids can also be kids without guns. Like, you don't have to have guns in order for kids to be kids. And you don't have to have toy guns in order for kids to have fun. And so this isn't even, what I'm addressing isn't even really a question of whether or not kids should or shouldn't have toy guns in the absolute sense, because I don't really know where I come down on that. If I was sort of like in charge of making a law for the country or something, I don't know what I would do, but I know that this is a question of what your personal feeling is as a parent. And this parent's personal feeling is that this bums me out. This is uncomfortable. I don't like my kids. I don't like support. I don't like my kids doing this. I don't like supporting it. Like, that's their personal feeling. And I think that's a completely valid feeling. I don't think there's anything wrong with that feeling. So I'm like, if that's your feeling, that seems like a lot of information telling you get something else that isn't a toy gun for Christmas. And on the other hand, all you have is, but I had toy guns and they were fun, and let kids be kids and stuff like that. But it's like, again, I'm sure you had other things in your childhood that were also fun that weren't Nerf guns. In other words, there's no reason the kid has to have a Nerf gun. There's no reason the kid has to have toy guns. You can argue whether or not toy guns are or are not related to American gun culture in the larger sense, and the violence of it, and the extremity of it in relationship to the rest of the world. That's a debate you could have, but that's not the debate in this letter. The debate in this letter is like, do my kids have to have guns to play with, or do they not have to have guns to play with? And I'm like, they really don't have to have guns. And if you don't like it, there's nothing saying that you need to sort of run roughshod over that feeling of not liking it. Don't buy the guns. Find something else for them to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I read this and I thought it seems like such an easy decision. And I was wondering where the pressure was coming from, like why she felt torn. Like, who's saying they want the guns? Like, are the kids clamoring for the guns? Is like dad clamoring for the guns? Is like grandma or grandpa clamoring for the guns? Like, who's the other side of this argument? Because she had such a clear opinion. And I also totally agree with you about like redefining fun. Like, okay, I Googled a little bit when I read this letter just to be like, what does psychologists say about giving kids toy guns? And I read this really interesting little quote, which was like, you know, toy gunplay isn't about violence as much as it's about symbols. Toy weapons symbolize power and leadership and authority, strength and control. And I was like, wow, we got to do a better job of providing symbols of power, leadership, authority, strength and control. And like, that's kind of our whole job as parents, right? Which is like, we don't need to give the kid the toy gun to give them that feeling of power and control. We need to find other ways and other forms of play that can do that. Now, if the kids are clamoring for the guns for some reason, like that's, I feel like, a whole other conversation. Like if there's someone out there clamoring for some reason, like then, okay, like that's, then you're talking to your kids about what the guns mean. And, you know, if you're going to give them to them, I feel like there are all kinds of things to think about, like making sure that they look like toys, just because people make bad calls when they see kids who are a little bit older with something that looks like a weapon, you know, make rules, all that sort of stuff. But I feel like we're not even there yet with this letter, because it seems like she has such a clear opinion. She's so strong. The bigger question for me was like, why would you give your kid a gun?
All right. So let's stipulate that the mom who wrote us this letter evidently seems to feel strongly that the kids should not have a gun, and maybe is wanting to make sure that that's okay to say no, even though you have a desire to play with this thing, then I don't think that's cool, especially not in our circumstances. So yes, absolutely fine. If that's your feeling, if you happen to have gone to that high school, or even if you didn't go to that high school and you live nowhere near Parkland, but you still find it disturbing because of the fact that now every couple of weeks there's another mass shooting in our country, absolutely, you don't have to give your kids guns, 100%. But so now let's take a harder question, which is like, is there any affirmative case to be made for like, is there any valid fun for these kids to have with Nerf guns, or for any kids to have with Nerf guns? Like, if we put on one side of the ledger all of the depraved things about gun culture and not wanting to legitimize that or inculcate our children into that, and the fact that these are Nerf guns rather than like realistic looking imitation guns that either make a bang sound or that you're meant to like point them and go, I shot you, you're dead. I feel like there's something intrinsically fun and kind of innocent about a machine that fires squishy foam projectiles at somebody else. Like, I feel like there's the part of me that hates guns, that doesn't want to play with guns, that doesn't want my kids playing with guns, but that also wishes they had a catapult or a slingshot or some kind of device that does the fun thing of firing something at somebody that doesn't hurt them, but that does allow you to, like, run around and point things at people and have things flying through the air and dive and leap and try and dodge and try not to get hit, but then also try to hit somebody else. That just seems like a cool, fun game for kids to play. And Nerf weapons, or Nerf imitation weapons, or whatever term they use for Nerf, feels like the closest version of the thing to that. They're big and they're brightly colored orange and green, and they look like giant, like, reservoirs of ping pong balls that, like, some of them have what look like automatic weapons, and those seem horrible. And then some of them look like weird robot machines for firing ping pong balls, and that seems sort of cool. And I would quite like it if we could establish a version of gunplay that was, like, cool and fun and innocent and that just involved throwing squishy things at each other.
Okay, but so, like, can you, so, like, the other, I mean, so can kids run around playing with Nerf guns in the front yard and diving behind couches in the living room and not be training for a school shooting? Absolutely. Can they be doing that and have it be 100% innocent without any contribution into any of our crazy gun stuff is in this country? Probably. But the thing is, the Nerf stuff isn't just about the play. It isn't just about running around, hiding and diving behind couches and throwing stuff at each other. It's running around, diving behind couches, throwing stuff at each other and shooting stuff at each other specifically out of guns. Because and the reason I say that is because when you talked about that, that is tremendous fun. My kids, myself, and their mom have all had such a great time, like, running around the house and, like, engaging in various guerrilla warfare throughout the rooms of the house. There's no doubt that that's a blast. But I was just thinking about when I was a kid, me and my cousin used to do that with little foam balls or with beanbags. Like, it doesn't matter. We didn't need something to imitate a gun to do that. It was like, okay, you take three of these, you take three of these, and if you get hit with one, that's 1 point or whatever. And then it was like, go. Everyone would scatter, and then we'd run around and try to find each other. And, like, that, again, that even that fun can be had without holding an object in your hand that is, I'm sorry, 100% meant to imitate a gun. I'm not saying, again, that you shouldn't do it, that it's, like, all bad. I'm saying that it's entirely possible to get everything fun out of Nerf stuff without actually invoking guns at all. And if there's a way to do that, then it's not necessary to have the gun.
And I'm just going to go ahead and admit here that I'm, like, a complete hypocrite. Like, I would prefer that my kids don't have toy guns. And my husband and I kind of disagree about that. And, like, I just kind of was like, OK, fine. But here's where I think I'm really failing when I really thought about it to answer this question, which is that I think when you have the toy guns in the house, you're teaching, like, all the fun and play and roughhousing without any of the safety messages that you should probably be transmitting when you're talking about firearms, even if they're toy firearms. Like, this is not just a fun thing that you, like, aim at your friend and, like, you run around the house and, you know, play. It also has all these other things attached to it that you should know about, too. Not because you're going to go pick up a real gun, but because you need to know that if you see a real gun, don't touch it. You need to know that, you know, you never aim at something that you don't want to destroy if it's a real gun. You know, like, all these other things that I feel like I, as a parent, probably am not teaching my kids when I get them a toy gun because I'm thinking, like, oh, it's just a toy. But in reality, it's not a gateway drug, but it's, like, it's the beginning, right? It's, like, where you begin to model something the same way you put on a costume. It's the way you begin to, you know, absorb the culture. And I think that that may be another thing that might go into this, you know, and that made me think as a parent, like, oh, maybe when we have these lying around the house, we also need to be talking about these other things.
I don't know. I feel like in the same way that kids
like
are
being
pretty
prude.
Good. No, I feel like in the same way that kids are usually pretty good at, like, differentiating between cartoon violence where somebody, like, falls off a cliff and goes flat like a pancake and then, like, accordions out and then he's chasing the roadrunner again, not to get too specific. In the same way that kids are good at telling that apart from, like, actually what happens to you when you fall off the edge of a cliff. I think kids are reasonably, like, I think it's possible to teach kids to be genuinely extremely terrified of actual guns, which they should be, and also to not be terrified of brightly colored water guns or Nerf guns. I think that's a distinction that kids of, like, five and up are capable of making.
Well, I guess it's not just like the terrified. I think you're also just teaching them about culture and like what you value as a culture. And I think that's what that psychologist said about like these guns symbolize power and strength and all these sorts of things. To me, like that's almost the most terrifying thing you're teaching when you give your kid a gun and let them have gunplay, that like this is how we exert force and this is how we have these conversations. You know what I mean? So I feel like it just has to come together. You have to bring those things together.
They're going to learn that whether you give them the toy gun or not, right?
I feel like that argument always, people always invoke that. Well, they're going to figure it out anyway. And that's true. But so the point isn't ever with kids to be like, hide stuff from them about the world, like never tell them something that they're going to later find out in the world. It's not like if they're going to find out in the world, then you just, it doesn't matter. The point is you need counter messaging for the fact, specifically because they're going to find out in the world. And so you're going to want them to be able to think critically about what they experience in the world. I remember when we were raising kids in LA, that was one thing that really struck me, is that in some ways, all of raising kids in LA, and this could be, maybe everyone's experience is different, I don't know. But what I found was that even though they were preschool aged, LA is just such a place with so many bad messages just in the air. It's not like all the people are bad. There's a lot of good stuff, blah, blah, blah. I love LA. But there's a place with a lot of bad messages in the air, a lot of stuff about body and image and power and money and fame and wealth. And it's just kind of ridiculous. And so I felt like a lot of what we were doing is that you bring your kids come home and you commence to spend the whole night deprogramming them from all the materialist stuff that they absorbed in the world. And so it wouldn't make sense for us to be like, they're going to learn that people, that skinny white people with money are treated better. So we should just tell them that skinny white people with money are treated, or we should just tell them they should be skinny and white and have money so they can get treated better. It wasn't that. It was more like, we have to prepare them so they can think critically about what the world is going to inundate them with. And
yeah,
so
absolutely.
If we live in a world that's going to say that guns represent power and authority and, you know, should be taken seriously, and that lack of force and lack of ability to cause harm or murder means that you aren't as serious and you aren't as for real, then part of my job isn't to reinforce that message at home. It's then becomes super vital that I actually begin to counteract that message at home and plant the seeds for them to think critically about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But then the question becomes, is it more effective to counter that message by saying, well, okay, outside then in the movies and on TV and everywhere, you're going to see guns used as a symbol of power and success and violence. But inside this house, we don't allow even toy representations of guns. Inside this house, that stuff is forbidden. Or is it more effective to say, inside this house, it's possible for us to think about them, to engage with them in the realm of fantasy, to turn them into play, to turn them into something harmless, and at the same time, to be very aware of how they exist in the real world. Because they exist in our fantasy lives as well. They exist in our culture, and they occupy that place. And teaching kids that they can engage with them fantastically without engaging with them in a destructive way feels like a valuable thing that you can teach kids.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say that I'm like a harm reductionist to my core. So I feel like banning, it's hard to say banning is ever the option, I think,
mm-hmm.
because it creates this thing that's coveted that you can't have. But I think part of the harm reductionist message is to kind of honor the danger of whatever you're playing with when you're playing with fire. You know what I mean? Don't just treat it as a toy. Don't just treat it as like a thing around the house. Ha ha. But like recognize that this is a thing with power that has been used and abused, and recognize the signs of doing things safely and unsafely. And that's true whether it comes to guns, drugs, sex, any of those things that are kind of like hot button things. I think those are the main messages we need to be giving.
Yeah. And I also think, I mean, I agree with that. And I think that's well said. Like, and I also feel like it's not, I don't know that those are the only two options, Gabe, that it's either like you deliver the message by banning it or you deliver the message by sort of like having, invoking it in this way. I also, as a side note, don't know that it's even necessary for guns to be part of our fantasies. Like, you seem to take that as a given. I don't know why that's a given. Why do guns have to be? Maybe they don't have to be part of our fantasies. But that's a side note. What I really think the answer to the question that you posed before, which is like, is it better to do this or do that? I actually think that what's best is to say, as for a parent, and again, this is about the letter writer specifically, for a parent to say, these are my values, care for, and I believe in these values so much that I'm actually living by them. Period. End of story. At some point, so as long as you live in this house, these are the values under which you're living, because that's the nature of the arrangement here. Certainly at some point you're going to go out into the world and invoke your own values, and I'm sure mine will be an influence on you. Go out and do your thing, but I'm living my values, which are right here. I think that's ultimately how you transmit information to kids. What they do with that information isn't entirely up to you. But I do think that it's important if you feel, and again, this letter writer seems to feel with great certainty that she thinks guns are bad and doesn't want to support them. And I think she, and I guess my point is that she has, not only does she have every right, it's actually, I think it's really, really, really good for her kids for her to live 100% within that value.
Agree.
Yeah, me too. All right. Thanks a lot for your letter. Obviously, this is something where on the broader issue, none of us has a clear policy statement. Thanks a lot for your letter, and hope that was helpful. Okay, so this is a part of the show where the hosts of the show now suggest something that's been helpful or useful to them in the course of their parenting. It's a segment that nowadays we're calling recommendations. Mary, do you have something that you would like to recommend to our listeners?
I do have a recommendation. So I have a friend. Her name is Hillary Frank. She hosts a parenting podcast called Longest Shortest Time, and she's about to publish a book called Weird Parenting Wins. And she sent it to me early to take a look at it, just because she was like, oh, take a look, tell me what you think. And I have to tell you, I did not crack it open. It like sat on my bookshelf until I ran into her and we started talking about what was in the book. And I was like, oh, now I really want to read it. And I just can't recommend it enough. You can pre-order it right now. So what it is she kind of goes through a bunch of stages of parenting life, and she has an essay on what happened to her. And then she has advice from other parents saying how they dealt with, you know, their teenagers in puberty or not getting any sleep as a new parent. Sort of all the stages are there. There's one particular essay that really stood out to me in this book, which is chapter 10. She's talked about this extensively, how she had this birth injury, and it really messed her up in terms of thinking about her body, in terms of her relationship with her husband. And this essay is really interesting because it talks about kind of what happened afterwards. Like, everyone kind of knew, like, she had this horrible birth injury, it was a bad experience, and like her relationship with her daughter. But this is the story of what happened to her afterwards, which is she went to doctors to try to get better. And she went to doctor after doctor after doctor, and they kept misdiagnosing her. They kept telling her to kind of get over it. You know, she just had awful experiences until she found a doctor who was like, oh, it's this right here. And by the way, I can fix it. And here's how. And so I used to report on health a lot. And to me, when I read this essay, I was like, oh, this is going to resonate with people so strongly, because I think especially for women, when they're dealing with doctors, they're often told to dismiss what they're feeling and just kind of move along, move on, especially if there's not an easy answer, because doctors like to solve problems. They're like the rest of us. They like to like go in and like do a little snip and we're done here and, you know, you're all better. And when those more complicated cases come along, I think they really struggle with it. And so for me, this essay in particular, it really is, I think, it's really going to affect women, and it's funny. And I just think that the book is great and people should totally read it. I think that Hillary's great. So that's my recommendation. Go pre-order Weird Parenting Wins.
Nice. Sounds great. I'm going to recommend a book. This is a children's book. This is a book that was given to me by a friend when the kids were young, and the book was out of print at the time, and I loved this book, and then my kids each loved the book, and I talked to more and more people who love it, and recently I was talking to the librarian at my kid's school because I saw that she had a picture of it on the wall in a gallery of children's books, and I was like, oh my God, you love that book too, and she said yes, and I looked it up, and it has just come back into print, and so now everyone can buy it. The book is called Tell Me a Mitzi. It's by Laura Siegel, who is an adult novelist who wrote a couple of children's books, and the pictures are by Harriet Pinkus. It's an amazing book. It's about two little kids growing up in New York in what seems to be the 40s or something like that. The illustrations are in the sort of Maurice Sendak, Robert Crumb school, so the people look very Ashkenazi. And what these kids do, they like every single moment of the day is given a full clause in a sentence. So the first sentence is about Mitzi and her baby brother Jacob, and they try to take a taxi to grandma's house, but they don't know how to, they don't know grandma's address, so they end up back in their apartment. But every sentence is something like, and so Mitzi took Jacob out of his crib and took him out of his pajamas and took off his diaper and changed his diaper and went into the kitchen and got a bottle and put it on the table and opened the fridge and got out some milk and poured the milk in. And you realize this is what it takes to get a kid out of bed. But it's being described in a way that has this sort of rhythm and poetry to it that kids immediately kind of warm to. And so it shares something of you, the parent's experience with the kid, but then it also is an adventure for the kid because this is the big sister's taking the baby brother out of the crib and she's going to put him in a taxi and they're going to go to grandma's house. It's an amazing book. I don't know anything else like it. And now it's back in print, happily, from Dover Press. Tell Me a Mitzi by Laura Siegel.
That is awesome. I'm also going to recommend a book series. In this case, the book series is the Sisters Grimm series by Michael Buckley. It is a 10 book series because there's a book 8 and a book 8.5. So it's a 10, it's a 10 section, 10 book fantasy series about typical sort of kids go, parents disappear, they go through foster homes, they're treated as maids, servants, and all kinds of other things that kids shouldn't have experienced. But they have this, and they have this uncaring caseworker, blah, 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 but they end up in the care of a long lost dead grandmother, and they find out that they are living in a town full of fantasies and fairy tales, and the family business is working as detectives. They solve crimes, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we all like know the shape of that story. This was a recommendation not from Georgia, but from one of Georgia's friends, because I told you that I started canvassing her peers for books that they loved growing up. And her friend, shout out Sadie, was really excited about this book series. She said she tore through the entire series and she was really pumped and she could not wait to make sure that more kids knew about the Sisters Grimm series from Michael Buckley. So shout out to Sadie here in Oakland, California.
Nice. And that's our show for this week. If you have a question you want us to address, you can leave us a voicemail message at 424-255-7833, or you can send us an email to momanddad@slate.com. You're probably in our Facebook group already, but if you're not, go to Facebook and search for Slate Parenting. It's the coolest Facebook group around. Lots of good conversations happening there. Very special thanks to Mary Harris for joining us this week. Subscribe to What Next, her daily news podcast that will be coming out every day starting January 2nd. You can already download a bunch of the episodes from the first brief season. They are really good. This is a great show. You'll be hearing more about it in January. Get on that train now. Our show is produced by Benjamin Frisch. For Carvel Wallace and Mary Harris, I'm Gabriel Roth. We'll see you next week.